stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. Tanzanians went to the polls Sunday to elect a new president and parliament in what was expected to be a tight race in the East African country. VOA correspondent Jill Craig visited several polling stations in Dar es Salaam Sunday. She reports that voting was peaceful in the capital and appeared to run smoothly with no incidents of violence or unrest.
The normally busy streets of Dar es Salaam were noticeably quiet Sunday as traffic was restricted for Tanzania's much-anticipated election day. Voters turned up at various polling stations around town, starting even before 7 a.m. when the polls opened, to vote in presidential, parliamentary, and local elections. Lightness Mwipopo is a domestic elections observer. Only a few hours in, she is pleased with what she is seeing at a polling station in Msasani.
But so far, the election is going well, and everything is well right now.
Voter Calista Nkone has been waiting more than 2.5 hours for her turn to vote in Mbuyuni. But she says that things have been well organized. Jill Craig, VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
Ivory Coast, meanwhile, is holding its first round of a presidential election Sunday. Current president Alassane Ouattara is widely expected to win and says he wants a first-round knockout victory. Sunday's vote is seen as an important test for the country following post-election violence 5 years ago that left at least 3,000 people dead. Voters in the Republic of Congo are deciding whether to change the constitution so President Denis Sassou Nguesso can run for another term. The amendments up for a vote in Sunday's referendum would abolish a 2-term limit for presidents, as well as an age limit of 70 for presidential candidates. More details at voanews.com. This is VOA News. As the flow of Syrians, Afghans, and others through the Balkans toward Western Europe continued unabated Sunday, some European leaders gathered to consider sending hundreds of guards to its borders with the Western Balkans as a way to deal with a massive influx of asylum seekers. "We commit to immediately increasing our efforts to manage our borders," according to the draft statement. Also under discussion, according to that plan, is to deploy more ships off Greece as a bloc seeks to balance Germany's welcome for refugees with tougher security measures. The mini gathering of Central and Southern European leaders, sought by German Chancellor Angela Merkel as winter sets in, comes 2 weeks after a full European Union summit was held on the same topic. Former British Prime Minister Tony Blair has apologized for what he calls mistakes made during the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq. In an interview with CNN, Blair also cites the military intervention as a trigger for current conflicts in the region, including the rise of the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. Direct airline flights between Russia and Ukraine have stopped. The move announced last month by Kiev is the latest in a series of tit-for-tat measures imposed over the conflict in Ukraine. The ban began at midnight after talks to avoid it failed last week. About 70,000 passengers a month will be affected, and analysts say it will be especially costly to Russian airlines. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad reiterated his focus on eliminating the threat of terrorists in his country, saying Sunday that would lead to the political solution that Syrians seek to the crisis they have endured for more than 4.5 years. Assad met with a group of Russian lawmakers and other officials in Damascus, and the state-run Sana'a news agency said the president stressed that taking out terrorist group would preserve Syria's sovereignty and its territorial integrity. Guatemalans are voting in a presidential runoff as a former TV comedian with no political experience is poised to win office after a corruption scandal toppled the country's last leader and fueled voter outrage with the political establishment. Voter surveys show 46-year-old Jimmy Morales is set to easily win Sunday's runoff vote against former First Lady Sandra Torres, who also vows to tackle corruption, but is seen by many as a part of the old political order. Polls have opened in Haiti under tight security as people there prepare to select the country's next president amid fears of violence that threaten to keep turnout low. 54 candidates are vying for the top position in the Caribbean nation. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
Registry books have not been delivered, and therefore they find their names there. But other than that, in a general sense, you can say things have gone on smoothly most of the precincts in Dar es Salaam.
Voting has ended in Tanzania in what is expected to be a competitive presidential election.
The reason was for the president to go and gift South African President Jacob Zuma in regards to the recently signed peace agreement.
South Sudan President Salva Kiir plans to return home on Monday after a two-day state official visit to South Africa.
Prevention is better than cure. That is what we're trying to sell to our colleagues instead. Train our police officers so that they know what is torture. That torture is absolutely prohibited.
And human rights experts criticize the increasing use of torture against terrorism suspects. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The National Electoral Commission of Tanzania says preliminary parliamentary and local election results are expected to be announced within 24 hours after Sunday's vote at polling stations across the country. VOA's Vincent McCorry is in Dar es Salaam, where my colleague Douglas Impuga reached him a short while ago for an update on the polling.
Well, everything seems to be going okay. I've been going around. There is a polling station in Dar es Salaam, the outskirts of the city. And from my observation, generally things have been peaceful, at least, the better part of the day. There are just reports from a few other stations that a number of people have not been able to vote until very late because the registry books have not been delivered, and therefore they can't find their names there. But other than that, in a general sense, you can say things have gone on smoothly most of the precincts in Dar es Salaam.
How would you describe the turnout? Were people so many at the voting booths?
Yes, especially the early part of the day, people turned out in big numbers early in the morning. In fact, it looked like everybody wanted to be first to vote. The turnout was big. Later on, the numbers went down. Those who came a bit later, like around, say, 3 o'clock, 2:30, 3 o'clock, we'll find very short lines. There were still people voting. But the turnout was good. A number of the people I spoke to said they were very enthused by this particular election. They wanted to come out and cast their vote. It looks like it is one election that has attracted the interest of most of the Tanzanians, and they want to have a say in the outcome of the particular election.
You mentioned earlier on about the issues with the register. From the reports you get over there, were voting materials delivered on time so that people could start voting early?
In most of the polling stations, yes. But there have been a few cases, perhaps one or two polling stations, where the material, particularly it is those registry books that were delayed, and therefore I was getting reports that even until around 4 o'clock, which is officially the closing time for voting, that people hadn't voted in a few polling stations, and therefore that is an issue that we're waiting to see how it will be resolved, whether they will be allowed, indeed, if the material is available, to continue voting until they complete the process or not. But those are few and far apart. It's not a major kind of a general occurrence around town or anywhere across the country.
Lastly, about the issue of counting, do we expect counting to begin tonight, later tonight?
Ideally, it's supposed to begin later tonight, and so people are highly anticipating that. That is the most tense moment, the counting, and eventually when they start getting any of the results through the Electoral Commission, people are observing to see how that particular process will go on, because That is what made me fear there could be some problems. If some groups feel that perhaps the Electoral Commission is interfering with the accuracy of the vote tally, then there could be some action. But we're watching and waiting to see what happens.
That was VOA's Vincent Macquarie. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Impuga from Dar es Salaam. For more on this apparent historic election in Tanzania, we are joined live by Generali Mulengu, a columnist with the East African newspaper. He joins us live via telephone link up from Dar es Salaam. Good evening, Generali.
Good evening to you.
Now, Generali, let me ask you, how do Tanzanians feel about the credibility of this election?
They are, of course, they are concerned about the credibility and the integrity of the whole process. The voting has gone on quite smoothly in most areas. There have been some hitches, but those hitches have been addressed. Those are polling stations that did not open early enough because of technical reasons are still open as we speak. People are still voting. There is speculation. Some people are suggesting that other polling stations that could not open because of technical problems might have to open tomorrow again. But a lot will hinge on the integrity of the counting and the tallying of the votes and the announcements of the winners as we go into 72 hours after the elections. So. Although, principally, this has gone on very well, much more will hinge on the integrity of the process involving counting and tallying and display of the results.
Now, generally, how confident do you think the people are about how the candidates will respect the choice of the people?
You cannot tell at this juncture because not everybody has confidence in the Electoral Commission. There have been calls for the Electoral Commission to be more independent, and the process in which it is named to be more transparent. So there is a varying degree of confidence among different groups, and especially among the opposition parties, because they do not necessarily feel that the Electoral Commission, which is chosen by the president who is the chairman of the ruling party, will be fair and do justice in this result. However, having said that, it is also true to say that the Electoral Commission has been trying to reach out through the media and explain the processes and trying to be as transparent as they can be in the actual operation of their task. But it remains to be seen whether at the announcement of the results, people will say, we think this is roughly what we expected it to be, and we can live with it. We have to wait and see.
Mm. Now, generally, one of the significant questions a lot of people have been asking about in Tanzania is whether the ruling CCM will be ready to concede defeat if indeed it loses this election in the presidential vote. What is your take?
If it loses, losing would mean what? Losing would mean that the National Electoral Commission has put out the results, and the results say that the CCM has lost. If that happens, then they would have no choice but to concede defeat and hand over power. The question is, will they allow the process to go that far, up to the moment where the Electoral Commission says this is the result, and we are saying that CCM has lost? So CCM must hand over power to the opposition. Will it get to that point? That is the question that we need to be asking. And that speaks to the integrity of the counting and the tallying process.
Looking at the demographics, it appears that the youth seem to be energized for the opposition leader Edward Lowassa, some people are concerned also that the women group, you know, which usually supports the CCM, might remain with them. What are your views about this changing demographics?
I tend to see the youth going with the opposition. The women in the rural areas would go with the ruling party as they have done over the past few elections. But there is a division among the young and more educated women or girls who tend to be all on both sides of the divide. Some are within CCM, but an equal number, proportion of the younger women, the more educated, the more urbanized women, will vote for the opposition.
Thank you very much, Generali. That was Generali Mulwengo, a columnist with the East African newspaper. He joined us live from Dar es Salaam. In Ivory Coast, more than 6 million registered voters plan to vote in polls Sunday for the first round of a presidential election. Seven candidates are running, including incumbent President Alassane Ouattara. The election is crucial for the country after previous post-election violence left several thousand people dead. For VOA, Emily Iob reports from the commercial capital, Abidjan.
Waiting outside a polling station inside a school in a central neighborhood of Ivory Coast's biggest city, Abidjan, this voter is getting impatient. The polling station is not open. More than 1 hour past the indicated time and about 50 people are waiting, shielding themselves from intermittent downpours. This voter says that if there is a delay of 1 or 2 hours for polling stations to open, it could lead to problems and prevent a peaceful election. Poll workers say they were waiting for observers from the various candidates and that not all the staff had arrived. But soon after, all stations in the neighborhood opened. The stakes are high after post-election violence in 2010 killed at least 3,000 people. Philippe, who arrived early, says voting is important.
D'abord, le vote se passe bien, et qu'après le vote, que chacun accepte les résultats des urnes.
He says he hopes the voting goes well and that whoever wins, people would accept the results and the country remain peaceful. 5 years ago, then-incumbent President Laurent Gbagbo and contestant Alassane Ouattara both claimed victory, and this led to months of unrest. Gbagbo eventually was arrested, and Ouattara became president of the East African country. Ouattara is running for a second term, facing six other contestants. Three candidates pulled out in the past few weeks, saying conditions for free and fair elections were not met, and the election should be boycotted. They claim the Electoral Commission was biased in favor of Ouattara, and some names on the list of voters were listed several times. The Electoral Commission says a new biometric verification system will prevent fraud. This voting staff member says the system checks fingerprints and shows personal information, which prevent an imposter from voting. About 7,000 local and international monitors have been accredited to observe voting across the country, and 34,000 soldiers, including 6,000 blue helmets, have been deployed to secure the vote. Emily Yop for VOA News, Abidjan.
South Sudan President Salva Kiir plans to return home on Monday after a two-day state official visit to South Africa, where he met with President Jacob Zuma. Presidential spokesperson Atenu Wekateni says Mr. Kiir briefed the South African leader about the implementation of the recently signed agreement with former Vice President Riek Machar aimed to end South Sudan's conflict. Atenu told me that reports that President Kiir is receiving medical attention in South Africa due to an undisclosed ailment are not true.
That's a state visit that the government of South Sudan, headed by President Salva Kiir, has undertaken to South Africa. The reason was for the president to go and brief South African President Jacob Zuma in regards to the recently signed peace agreement for resolution of conflict in South Sudan, and the political will that the government of South Sudan has shown in implementing it. So the president was able to meet Jacob Zuma yesterday, and they talked about the the pulling out of Ugandan troops, which is an indication that the government of South Sudan is willing to implement. And also, they talk about Arusha agreement, because South Africa is behind the Arusha agreement, which was actually trying to unite the faction of the SPLM. And the president also talks to president of South Africa, about the security arrangement in which the government of South Sudan has already initialed and the rebel are still in transigence. And so the president wanted South Africa to also join to pressurize the rebels in order to sign and initial the security protocols so that peace can back to South Sudan.
There have been reports of the fact that the president has been sick and has been hospitalized in South Africa, and that the state visit that you are talking about is just a facade, and the briefing is also a facade to hide the fact that the president has been sick and the fact that he has been declining public events because of his ailment. What do you say to that?
First of all, why should President Salva Kiir hide if he's feeling sick? He's a human being. If he feels sick, he will go to hospital. But the truth of the matter is that he is not sick, and people want him to be sick. So the people who want him to be sick are just wish hunters. And we, as a state, we don't care about anybody who says President Salva Kiir is sick. But when you know he is not, that's what I can tell you. President went to South Africa for a state visit. Not anything to do with seeing a doctor, because if he was to see the doctor, the president has a medical team that is qualified, and they are here in South Sudan. So why should he go to South Africa then, if he is not going for operation?
I'm sure you
this are. This is not true, and the truth is what I'm telling you.
I'm sure you have heard this report in local media and all social media platforms, and the report.
These are the rebel manufactured lies. It is the rebel woman that manufactured this. But any time that president is in South Africa, any time that the president is on a state visit, they even talk about the president, to be undergoing a very serious operation or is dying and all this. These are the nonsensical, and they are just made in an attempt, to just confuse the public of South Sudan. Not anything to do with the reality at all.
You said the president spoke with President Zuma to try to convince the rebel group to initiate the security arrangement. What do you think the prospects are that President Zuma will be able to convince the rebels?
First of all, given South Africa's role in bringing the parties of the SPLM closer through Arusha agreement, and South Africa being one of the African economic and superpower of Africa, the role of Zuma will be very crucial in trying to pressurize the SPLM, SPLA-IO in order to initiate the security agreement, which the government has already initiated, and it is supposed for the SPLM-IO to sign it, so that the implementation of peace is not in a better way, but they have refused. So the prospect is that South Africa will be doing its best to ensure that the SPLM or the rebel SPLM-IO comes in to sign and initiate this security protocol.
Attorney Wekatene is the spokesman for South Sudanese President Salva Kiir. He spoke with me from the capital, Juba. Human rights experts from 44 African countries have criticized the increasing use of torture against terrorism suspects in police custody, at military investigation centers, and in traditional African institutions like palaces. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
It is a conundrum that most nations that struggle against terrorism confront how to treat terrorism suspects in custody and extract useful information to thwart their activities. At the conclusion of a three-day conference Friday, rights experts urged African leaders grappling with the issue to ensure that security personnel adhere to international standards of human rights. Omar Bongo of Gabon's National Human Rights Commission says all African states faced with terrorism threats disrespect one of the fundamental principles of human rights, that no one shall be subjected to torture or to cruel, inhumane or degrading treatment or punishment.
Notre position est que les États puissent mettre en place des mécanismes, des politiques et même des législations.
He says African states should put in place policies and legislation that respect human rights while combating terrorism, because many people are being tortured innocently. Africa, in recent years, has been faced with growing terrorism. Rights experts at the conference did not reveal which countries are the worst offenders of human rights. The experts did criticize laws enacted last year by Cameroon and Chad, two nations that suffer attacks by the Boko Haram group, that proposed the death sentence for people guilty of carrying out, abetting, or sponsoring acts of terrorism. The rights experts also said the military in African countries dealing with terrorist attacks, torture suspects, and give them inhumane treatment. Namibian-born rights activist John Walters says the military should be trained to respect human rights in the discharge of their duties.
Prevention is better than cure. That is what we're trying to sell to our colleagues instead. Train our police officers so that they know what is torture, that torture is absolutely prohibited.
The United Nations, on December 10, 1984, adopted the Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman, or Degrading Treatment, and set the eradication of the practice as one of its main goals. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
A senior U.S. diplomat visiting the Democratic Republic of Congo has urged the government there to take concrete steps to prepare for future elections and to cooperate fully with the UN mission working to resolve conflict in the DRC. Sarah Sewall, the U.S. Undersecretary of State for Civilian Security, Democracy and Human Rights, also warned of consequences for those who violate constitutional processes. Sewall spoke to reporters Saturday in Goma, in the eastern part of the country. For VOA, Nick Long has more.
Sarah Sewall was wrapping up a week-long visit to the DRC, which she said focused on two key issues: elections and cooperation between the Congolese army and the UN mission here, known as MONUSCO. The American diplomat said there was a need to move forward with registering voters and with making and communicating preparations for ensuring security during the elections, and there was also a need to agree an electoral timetable. She called for a dialogue to settle electoral issues.
We believe that there is a need for a neutral forum for discussion to make progress with the principle of upholding the Constitution and anticipating the peaceful transition of power.
Opposition parties have rejected previous government offers of dialogue because they say it would be dedicated to reaching a deal allowing President Joseph Kabila to extend his rule beyond his constitutional two-term limit. The opposition instead has called for an internationally mediated dialogue focused on electoral issues. The US has committed $25 million to help support elections in the DRC, Sewall said.
The United States has been fully committed to moving the electoral process forward, which is why it is so frustrating to see the constant delays on the part of the institutions that should be moving forward to provide additional funding, to begin the registration process, and otherwise be taking concrete steps toward realizing elections.
Sewall added that she thought the lack of preparation was a conscious choice. Referring to attempts to override presidential term limits, Sewall said recent events in Burundi and Congo-Brazzaville show how destabilizing the rejection of the people's will can be. She suggested the US could soon follow the EU in imposing travel bans on those instigating violence in Burundi.
These are the kinds of tools that can help convince those who would violate constitutional processes that there will be consequences for their actions.
On security, Sewall urged the resumption of joint operations by the government and the UN mission against armed groups in eastern Congo. That choice, she said, is up to the government.
The core issue with regard to the continued operation of the armed groups is the political position of the government about whether or not it will conduct joint operations with MONUSCO.
Undersecretary Sewell also said she had raised the issue of the continued detention of democracy activists during her talks. She urged the government to refrain from targeting those who aim to express their beliefs peacefully and to stop confusing peaceful expression of opinion with criminal activity. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, sports with Segun Adeyemi from the Nigerian commercial capital Lagos, and music from our African collection. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sport. Let's go to Nigeria and join Segun Adeyemi. Good evening, Segun.
Good evening, Peter, and good evening, Africa. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports for Sunday, October 25th. Two of Africa's four representatives have advanced to the knockout stage of the ongoing 2015 FIFA Under-17 World Cup in Chile. Defending champion Nigeria and Mali finished atop their groups in the first round and have advanced. Guinea is the only African team to have been eliminated from the tournament going into today's Sunday's final group matches. South Africa, Africa's fourth team at the Under-17 World Cup, will know its fate later today, Sunday, when it takes on Russia in their final group match. Nigeria's Golden Eagles won two matches, beating the United States 2-0 and host Chile 5-1. The defending champions, however, lost 2-1 to Croatia to finish with 6 points on top of Group A. Croatia is second on 5 points, while host Chile is third on 4. Both also advanced from the group. United States, with only 1 point, has been eliminated. For its part, Mali won two matches and drew one to finish on 7 points on top of Group D. On Saturday, Mali beat Honduras 3-0 in their final group game. The West Africans previously beat Ecuador 2-1 and played goalless with Belgium. Guinea had no chance in Group B, where it lost two matches and drew one to finish with only 1 point at the bottom. After drawing 1-1 with England in their opening game, the Guineans succumbed 1-0 to South Korea and 3-1 to Brazil. South Africa has lost one match and drawn one, and must beat Russia in their final game later today, Sunday, to have any chance of advancing from Group E. Round of 16 matches kick off on October 29th. Elsewhere, former South African anti-apartheid campaigner Tokyo Sexwale, once jailed alongside Nelson Mandela, on Saturday officially entered the race for the president of FIFA, the World Soccer's governing body. The 62-year-old diamond mining tycoon and former politician is the fifth official candidate for the February 26, 2016 election to succeed Sepp Blatter. No African has ever headed the 111-year organization, although President of African Football Confederation Issa Hayatou is the current interim president of FIFA. Sexwale decided to run after securing the full backing of the South African Football Association, SAFA. Other confirmed candidates ahead of the deadline this Monday are European Football Association Chief Michel Platini, Prince Ali bin Al Hussein of Jordan, former Trinidad and Tobago captain David Naki, and former FIFA Deputy General Secretary Jerome Champagne. Turning to African football, Angola has become the latest qualifier for the 2016 edition of the African Nations Championship for players in the continent's domestic leagues. Angola qualified despite losing 2-1 to South Africa in their return leg final qualifying match in the southern zone of the qualification series in the Angolan capital, Luanda, on Saturday. Having won the first leg 2-0, Angola picked the tickets to the finals on the 3-2 aggregate. Angola becomes the eighth nation to qualify for the 16-team finals. Others are Rwanda, which qualifies automatically as hosts, Morocco and Tunisia from the northern zone, Mali and Guinea from Zone West A, as well as the Democratic Republic of Congo and Gabon from the central zone. The 2016 African Nations Championship finals will be played in Rwanda from January 16th to February 7th. Finally, athletics. Ethiopian runners won the men's and women's titles at the 2015 Frankfurt Marathon in Germany today, Sunday.
In the men's events, Ethiopian Cissé Lema ran 2 hours, 6 minutes and 26 seconds to win, beating Kenyan duo of Lanin Ruto and Alpha Slagat to the second and third places respectively. In the women's race, another Ethiopian, Gulume Tulesa, emerged as a surprise winner in 2 hours, 23 minutes and 12 seconds, as Ethiopians made a clean sweep of the podium. Gulume ran a personal best by over 6 minutes to beat Denknesh Mekash in the sprint finish. Mekash was credited with the same time as Gulume, and their compatriots, Koren Jelela, continued her return with a third place finish in 2 hours, 23 minutes and 52 seconds. That ends it for this weekend's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm Segun Adeyemi in Lagos. Now sending it back to Peter Klote in Washington.
Thanks a lot, Segun. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African Sports Nightline Africa Sports. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
our destiny, oh, oh. And that's where we go, they go, oh. So no matter the color, oh, oh. If you see your body when don't elevate, wish and wear no. If when you got book or capo, if you want to jump by tongue, nobody today, somebody tomorrow, na so if you choose it, brother, where you belong. I get them my own, you didn't get your own, trouble no good. We pack on a jealousy, the pop knows you want to see. If there is anything that you want to see, complain, brother. As a super sharp correct driver, you free to overtake it. As a super sharp correct rider, be free to overtake it. Matter the gallop, reach our destiny, and that's how we go. They go. So no matter the gallop, reach our destiny, and that's how we go. They go. When I get enter taxi, they go. I be with the driver and Range Rover. See, happiness is a thing of mind. Yo, no, no. Rose up your water, no means say you don't go hammer. Go do anything from gutter. Wash up well, go still with her. You know what, wa. I cannot pour one, they know. From go to boy, wa wa. We go to fire, they go. As a super sharp correct driver, you fit to overtake. So we go to go.
Africa lady, oh.
Aye.
I sing in the song for Panya.
Aye.
And I dance in the dance for Panya, oh. I would do anything for Panya.
Anything, yeah.
And I thank you the Lord for Panya, eh.
Oh, yeah, what is my baby name? Panya,
Panya, Panya.
Oh, yeah, what is your baby name?
Panya,
Panya. I request for my baby girl. She's my fine baby,
baby, oh, yeah.
She's my African lady, yeah.
Lady, oh, yeah.
My panya sweet like a chocolate. When she come around, she heavyweight. She a dance, she a move, immediate. Baby, I am.
Aya, what is my baby name?
Panya, panya, oh, panya.
miss your baby name, man. I request for my baby girl. Panya scatter the fluff for me. And I thank you the Lord for Panya. Too much love I have for you.
Abi,
hey. Aya, what is my baby name?
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Good evening, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. While the people of Congo-Brazzaville are being obliged to go to the polls to vote on a referendum on a discredited African practice of prolonging the mandate of an incumbent president. The people of Ivory Coast or Cote d'Ivoire are going to the polls to select a president at the end of the first term of President Alassane Ouattara. The people of Ivory Coast remember very well the disasters of the last election in 2010. After a long quarrel between the then incumbent President Gbagbo and the opposition parties, Alassane Ouattara was allowed to be a candidate despite the argument of the opposition of Gbagbo's forces at the time that he was not Ivorian and that he was not legitimate candidate, even though Ouattara had served as prime minister under the long leader of Ivory Coast, Félix Oufiat-Boigné. At the end of the election, it was declared that Ouattara had won, but Laurent Gbagbo refused to vacate office, and this was essentially because of the disastrous civil war. After the forces of Gbagbo were defeated by military means, Ouattara assumed the presidency in 2011. Since then, he has been accused of having failed to promote reconciliation among the people of Ivory Coast, and also that the people of Ivory Coast have seen a one-sided prosecution of those responsible for the civil war. Those supporters of Laurent Gbagbo have been tried, some in prison, and Gbagbo himself is now before the ICC in The Hague. Despite United Nations and other international human rights groups that both sides were guilty of atrocities, very few of Ouattara's supporters have been brought to the books. But no one can deny that since Ouattara assumed the presidency, the economy of Ivory Coast has been booming. No surprise, perhaps, because he had a lengthy experience in the IMF, International Monetary Fund, and he is a well-known economist. He has been able to diversify the economy of Ivory Coast with a large proportion going to industry instead of agriculture, which was the long-term basis of the economy of Ivory Coast. Today, Ivory Coast is again exporting 40% of cocoa around the world, and it has now advanced beyond India in the export of cashew nuts. So the economy has been going for at least 8% a year, and you could see it by all accounts in Ivory Coast, which is now regaining its reputation of the Paris in West Africa. Now, the campaign began with 10 candidates. Three of them have now withdrawn, including the long-term foreign minister, Amara Esse. All of them have complained that the voting will not be free and fair. Two of these 10 candidates are women, one of them the youngest. Now, we have to see there have been no reports of possible violence, but we do not know what will happen at the end of the election. Hopefully, it will go on peacefully. But we should not forget that elections are not the symbol of total democracy. For democracy to take root, you have to build institutions, free press, free parliament, and free judiciary. Above all the people of Ivory Coast and all countries in Africa should be guaranteed full civil liberties. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of The Voice of America. I hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, sports editor Segun Adeyemi, and our engineer for today, Nick Ivanov, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, the habit of thinking is the habit of gaining strength. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Key stakeholders from the wheat flour industry came together in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, in October. They celebrated business growth and shared information from 3 years of engagement under the African Alliance for Improved Food Processing Activity, a public-private partnership between the United States Agency for International Development, Partners in Food Solutions, and TechnoServe. The activity's participants worked with Ethiopia's commercial wheat millers, producers of fortified blended foods and flours, bakeries, and pasta manufacturers to expand wheat flour fortification in Ethiopia. Chronic food insecurity and malnutrition are grave problems in Ethiopia, where 2 out of every 5 children suffer from stunting, which means a lack of food and critical nutrients that impact their physical and mental growth. The availability of nutritious fortified wheat, a dietary staple in Ethiopia, is one step toward expanding access to nutritious food and reducing hunger. The activity harnessed the global technical expertise international food processors, including General Mills, Cargill, Royal DSM, and Bühler, to expand the skills of Ethiopia's growing food processing industry. Over a 3-year period, the activity supported 20 medium and large millers and processors to implement quality management systems, national standards and certification requirements, develop processes and nutritious food products tailored to market demand, strengthen financial systems, and improve business efficiencies. The activity trained staff members from 165 food processing companies and 2 government regulatory agencies on technical and business subjects such as wheat flour fortification, quality management systems, food safety, and national standards. Growth and expansion of the supported businesses brought Ethiopia the first locally produced fortified wheat flour, ensured sustainable sourcing of wheat from nearly 500,000 farmers, availed multigrain nutritious bread to the public, and facilitated access to land for expansion by farmer-owned wheat milling cooperatives. Notably, the activity hosted the President of the United States in one of the supported business sites under the U.S. government's Feed the Future initiative to showcase sustainable production of fortified weaning baby foods. This alliance, said USAID Acting Mission Director Gary Robbins, is central to our partnership in Ethiopia and the overall Feed the Future initiative. USAID will continue to work with the Ethiopian government to build its capacity to rapidly respond to periodic food insecurity, while also supporting efforts to find sustainable solutions to long-term nutritional challenges.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.